What do one of the world's top food cities, a nationally celebrated zoo and science museum, and a Condé Nast Traveler Top 10 Best Big City in the Country have in common? Yes, it's Columbus. This isn't just a stop on the map. It's where award-winning flavors, unforgettable family moments, and big city buzz come together. Let's be honest, Columbus is turning heads. For top-of-the-line discoveries in your own backyard, visit experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live on Sports Grid, this is The Early Line. I'm Kevin Walsh, joined by Donnie Wrightside here on a big-time Wednesday with a lot to get to. DRS, how you feeling?
Feel good today. Waking up in the morning, post-trade deadline, a lot to look forward to. Football in our future tomorrow. Yeah, it's a good day to be alive.
Definitely a lot of good stuff going on there. We do, though, begin for, unfortunately, the second time this week with some sad news, the passing of iconic broadcaster Vin Scully, the voice of the Los Angeles Dodgers. For some, it almost they feel like kind of the voice of baseball, the way he was able to capture the sport in between at-bats, in between pitches, in between innings, and everything really that came with it. An absolute legend of the sporting world passed away just the other day, Donnie.
Yeah, legend is correct here. And also a one-man booth, Kevin. Think about that in today's day and age. Two men in the booth, three men, multiple sideline reporters. All you needed was Vin Scully to paint the exact picture like a Picasso. One of a kind, and we are sorely going to miss Vin Scully. I mean, I thought he would, you know, even do games like the next 10 years. He's done it so long, you just expected him to be around calling Dodgers games. What a shame here, but certainly rest in peace to a legend.
Yeah, absolutely so. But with that, there were obviously a lot of headlines throughout Major League Baseball yesterday as it was trade deadline day. And the deadline, I don't think it disappointed. Juan Soto, we were wondering, would this get done? Where would the landing spot be? And it is San Diego. The Padres stay aggressive, obviously the most aggressive team, because it wasn't just the Soto move. Josh Bell from Washington in the deal. We talked about Hader yesterday, brought in Brandon Drury as well. The Padres going for it this year and likely for years to come.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And how about this? You know, hey, it's either the Mets or the Dodgers. They're going to square up where there's a new kid in the game, so to speak, now as the San Diego Padres. Wait about 2 to 3 weeks when Tatis gets back in that lineup and they sort of round out their rotation in the back end of their bullpen. Nobody wants to face the Padres now in the playoffs. And good on the Padres for going for it and challenging the Dodgers as opposed to saying, what do you want us to do, Kevin? We can't compete with the Dodgers. No, they're trying to compete with the Dodgers, and I love it.
Yeah, they certainly are. Right now, the San Diego Padres are sitting at 10-1. To win the World Series. Somebody yesterday said, man, 10-1, all that. They were 20-1. You cut your World Series odds in half. That's a job well done. We'll talk more about the shift that comes with Juan Soto landing in San Diego. Another team that was pretty aggressive yesterday was the Philadelphia Phillies. A couple of moves headlined by Noah Syndergaard. We mentioned on this show yesterday, you know, we didn't know how impactful it would be, but Thor was set to throw against the A's last night. He did ultimately get removed from that game as he is on his way to the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, good move by the Philadelphia Phillies because, as I told you guys yesterday, trying to be in a playoff race and do some damage, you can't have every fifth day a bullpen day where you take an automatic loss, which they did yesterday. So at least maybe you will avoid bringing up tomato cans from AAA to pitch games.
At the end of the day, the Phillies feeling empowered likely by that expanded playoff format to continue to push and continue to go for it. That is the benefit of extra seats in the playoff spot right there. We thing about what was surprising, you know, maybe a couple of weeks ago, the idea that Soto was going to be traded was surprising. We knew, though, that a deal was very likely to get done. I might argue, too, the single most surprising thing of this deadline is not a deal that was made, but not made. The Chicago Cubs players out there hugging, saying goodbye, waving to the crowd. Wilson Contreras, Ian Happ can hug again. In Chicago Cubs uniforms, no deals done. The radio audience is here on a Wednesday morning. Kevin Walsh, Donnie right side of the early line on Sirius XM, channel 159. DRS, surprised that the Cubs sat tight?
I am really surprised that the Cubs sat tight because it's almost like they had the structure of saying, we are going to tear this down and then eventually rebuild and build this back up. Well, the case now is you got rid of your bullpen but kept some of your superstars, which now you might lose in the offseason for a middling draft pick. Terrible job by the Chicago Cubs for me, K-Dub.
Really, really bizarre. Why the asking price was so high. I mean, they're going to try and tell people they're going to be in on these guys. From a contract perspective, I'm doubtful. Very, very doubtful when we get ultimately to baseball's free agency period. More of the same for Jacob deGrom. You see this here, oh, they lost at his return. He must not have it. No, he was fine. Five innings, one run, six strikeouts, no walks. He was fine. And the second he left, the Nationals were able to strike with three runs in the bottom of the sixth inning and ultimately as a near 3-1 underdog beat the New York Mets in DeGrom's first game back.
Double-A ball club out there on the field, the Nationals, which gutted their organization essentially at the trade deadline, ends up winning 5-1 by margin. What was the reverse run line yesterday on the Washington Nationals? Because you could have taken the plus 2.5 that we were looking at. I said, man, you're crazy for even looking that way. The Mets are going to roll this Nationals team. Unbelievable. But as we like to say, Kevin, that's baseball.
Yeah it certainly is. Plus 2.5 runs at a minus 120. You didn't need any of them. Here's a headline that I know has your attention. The NFL suspending Dolphins owner Stephen Ross, also taking away a 2023 first round pick. This is for tampering that involves the heavy recruitment of Tom Brady and Sean Payton, confirming what at the beginning of it all felt like wild, wild rumors.
It did. You know, $1.5 million fine, which isn't much for owner Stephen Ross at that point. But we did think it was wild rumors. And I would love to see in the next, what, year or two, a 30 for 30 on the Miami Dolphins and their almost coup attempt with Tom Brady and Sean Payton.
Yeah, that would be something to see. Also, Tim Patrick, Broncos wide receiver with a torn ACL. We'll talk about the impact of that and a lot more next year on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Juan Soto is a San Diego Padre. This was a race that began with a little less than 10 teams, perhaps. The Yankees and the Mets eventually fall out for different reasons of this race, and it continues to shrink. The AL West teams and the Rangers and the Mariners that were linked drop off as well. There were a final three, the Dodgers, the Padres, and the Cardinals. And the Cardinals were heavily in the mix, not just crop of young players, but young players with some major league experience behind them. But they just couldn't cross that finish line. And the San Diego Padres were aggressive throughout and ultimately bring in one of the very best players in Major League Baseball in Juan Soto well before he's ever going to even turn 25 years old. A huge, huge trade. For some who have covered this sport for decades, believe the biggest trade in baseball history, Juan Soto is a San Diego Padre.
It is amazing how we got to this point, but is it a surprise here, Kevin, with what the Nationals have done over the past 3 to 4 years? They're either trading or letting stars walk. Anthony Rendon out to the Los Angeles Angels. You know, you saw Bryce Harper go to the Philadelphia Phillies. Trades for Max Scherzer, you know, trades for Trey Turner. They've gutted this franchise of, you know, ridiculous riches for players. But the one guy you thought would always be around a corner piece for the next 15 years would have been Juan Soto. but yet they traded him away as well. Can you imagine if they just kept all those guys on the roster, the multiple World Series championships, and being in the thick of things every single year? And if you're a fan base of the Nationals, how did it get to this point? Well, an ownership that looked at and said, you know what? Profits are more important than what we actually put out on the field. We'll always make money. We can actually make more money if Juan Soto is not on the team where we have to pay him $500 million throughout his career. This is also one of the next steps in baseball that you know me, Kevin. I like to really rail on. If you're a Washington Nationals ownership group, what are you doing in baseball? Like, you have the tanking for years to get the Harpers, the Strasburgs, and load up that roster and signing guys like generational talents like Juan Soto. But you let it all go to pieces. This is one of those where you're supposed to keep around. This is why you own a baseball team, to have centerpieces of your franchise, like one of the game's maybe all-time greats when it's all said and done, Juan Soto. And you let him walk for a couple prospects here. And I don't want to hear about how good the prospect pool was. You just lost a generational talent that you wait for 25, 30, 40 years of your franchise to get a player like that. And he walks, not at 33, Kevin, but at 23. That's amazing.
It is amazing. And I know there are people who value prospects a lot more than you and I. And I can appreciate that. But again, Soto is 23 years old. But the bigger problem for Washington might not just be losing Soto, because, Tony, they are a horrific baseball team, the worst in the entire sport. We know that baseball is not a one-man game. You need a lot of people. You need to be involved and in the mix. And okay, maybe you can give him a pat on the back for letting a Rendon leave to L.A. because it hasn't worked out, but they did that. And you might say, well, they won the year after letting Bryce Harper leave. Sure, but he's put an NL MVP on the mantle since that departure. What about Scherzer? What about Trey Turner? They've continually let people leave to get to this point here in Washington. But largely, the prospects and all of that, good for them. Let me know in 5 years if any of them are even, you know, flirting with all-star teams in time. Because Soto made an all-star team this year. He'll make one again next year, and the next year, and the next year, and the next year. And that's really what matters. For the San Diego Padres to be in the division with the team that spends more money than everybody else in the Los Angeles Dodgers, who at the time of right now, where we sit here right now, a double-digit lead in the division. The Padres have a better odds to win the World Series than win that division because of the gap that exists right now. And the San Diego Padres pull no punches. And they've done this a couple of times where they've tried to go for it and maybe it doesn't work. And they're going to continue to go for it. This, to me, above all else, was a great day if you were a San Diego Padre fan, because your organization told you, we're serious. We want to compete this year and for years to come with this move right here, right now. The statement made by pulling Josh Hader out of Milwaukee was an indicator, right? Going in on the Manny Machado was an indicator. But this, above all else, is that sign that the San Diego Padres want to be taken serious, and they absolutely will. Because now the front four of that starting lineup is at some point Fernando Tatis, one of the very best players in baseball, when available, will be back. Manny Machado has been one of the five best players in the National League all season long, and really throughout his San Diego tenure. And now you bring in a couple of guys that are both top 12 in OPS on the season, and not just Juan Soto, but Josh Bell as well. This is a Padre team that had their odds to win the World Series cut in half, and it is completely understandable when you look at what they have now in their building.
I think what you said was correct for now and later on the Padres. This wasn't one of those, hey, it doesn't come around all that often, Kevin. We got to sit back and maybe we can make the playoffs this year. Let's go all in. No, this is actually a move that for the next five, let's just say for the next 5 years, Hader's under 30, Machado's still in his prime, obviously, and then you have Tatis and certainly Soto, two of the younger guys. This team is built to win now and built to win next year and for 5 years down the road. If you keep the band together, as we like to say, they're going to be able to challenge the Dodgers and the Giants on a year-to-year basis, where in the past, San Diego always operated as a smaller market club, now stepping up into the ranks and also into that luxury tax threshold, because you take Juan Soto here, not to get him for a year and a half, right, Kevin? You take him here because you are going to break the bank, probably pay him northwards of $450 million that he liked, and maybe even less term where he can still get another free agent contract around that 31, 32-year-old plateau. Fantastic move for the Padres. They're in it now, and that fan base has to be fired up because you're going for it now, and also you have three of the biggest superstars in the game on your own team in San Diego with a beautiful ballpark. And a good team, no longer, Kevin. It's, hey, come out to the ballpark and enjoy it. It's great weather, fantastic ballpark. Maybe we win, maybe we lose, no big deal. No, the pressure is now on the Padres players because they have enough to get the job done now.
It certainly feels that way. Again, we talk about their odds to win the World Series. Sitting at 10-1, their divisional odds do feel out of reach, which is understandable. If you want to flirt with it, they're 11.5 back, and they're an 18-1 in division. Their odds in the National League right now are plus 490, third best on the board. And this is a team that, when you look through it, obviously the lineup grabs the headlines, but, okay, well, what are you doing for me as it pertains to your pitching staff? Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove is a very, very solid 1-2 punch. I know Manaea maybe hasn't been exactly what they were hoping for, but you would think between Manaea, Snell, and Clevinger, they will have at least a guy they trust enough as their third man in this rotation when we get ourselves to the postseason. And they're likely going to see if they can try and outscore people, certainly, when we hit the postseason. That's what they're going to be predicated on. I think that this is a very real contender. However, to me, Donnie, you draw up the list of teams that you consider to win the World Series, you know, only the Dodgers or something like that. I think the Padres are absolutely World Series contenders. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know if that was the case before this move. They were solid, but they weren't scary. They're scary now. They're legitimate now. Again, it's going to be Tatis to Soto to Machado to Bell in the front four of that lineup. I don't care if you're out there in the National League going up against a Jacob deGrom, going up against a Tony Gonsolin, going up against a Max Fried. Because while those guys all absolutely deserve their credit, they're going to go up against the top of those orders, and they're going to be thinking about it the night before quite a bit.
Yeah, high leverage situations now. That's what the Padres had. You can no longer pitch around them. And certainly talking about Juan Soto being in the Nationals landscape where it's like, hey, pitch around Juan Soto, pitch around Josh Bell, and nobody else can do any damage. That's not the case. You sandwich Juan Soto in between of Machado and Tatis here, you got to pitch to him, and he could do some damage for sure.
Juan Soto, 35-1 to win NL MVP, the ninth best odds on the FanDuel Sportsbook. We will see if going to San Diego has any impact in the way that we saw Max Scherzer going to the Dodgers really shake up last year's NL Cy Young market. A lot more from the deadline yesterday for us to discuss, and that's all coming up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Deadline headlines continue here on the early line. We take a look at everything that happened yesterday. For the Philadelphia Phillies to begin, Thor, Robertson, and Marsh. Marsh looking to try and shore up the outfield, Robertson for the bullpen, and Thor to stop the hair-pulling experience that happens for Donnie every single time this team throws out a non-competitive starter, which, check the final score of yesterday's Phillies game, you just missed it if you weren't paying attention. I ask you, what did you make of the Phillies' moves here on deadline day?
I thought it was solid. I guess you could say like they would have wished or fans would have wished they would have got Rodon and pried him loose from San Francisco. But on the outskirts of it, you needed another starting pitcher. You got it here. You didn't give up a lot. You gave up the number one overall draft pick from 2016. The Phillies are lucky they even got a bag of baseballs back from Mickey Moniak. That was a complete whiff. Imagine tanking your entire season and saying, let's restart the franchise. And Mickey Moniak was the pick you got to restart your franchise. That's the Phillies' luck in the draft here over the past couple years. But looking at the Phillies and what they did, Robertson comes back to the Philadelphia Phillies, who was a key signing 3 years ago, but his arm apparently fell off after about three innings of pitching for the Phillies, never to be heard from again. but he's having a decent season. You need extra arms in that bullpen. I thought that was a really nice move. And then getting Marsh in the outfield, a good young player that's controllable over the next couple of years, cutting Odubel Herrera and also Jurys Familia. So if you are a Phillies fan or looking at that front office, yesterday was a very productive day, which your team, the only thing you can say to yourself, Kevin, is were you a better team today than you were yesterday? And the Phillies apparently are now.
Which I think is true. And the one thing for me with that Phillies, we entered the season, right? And the prevailing notion was they're going to have to outscore whoever they're lined up against. Now, it's been a little difficult because Harper has been injured and Castellanos has really not performed anywhere near the level of expectation. But if at some point he can start to turn it around and Bryce comes back, you know this team can score. But now you look at this rotation. Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, when everybody's there. Aaron Nola, Noah Syndergaard, Ranger Suarez, Kyle Gibson. That's solid. You're not throwing any more Vince Velasquez's out there on a day-to-day basis. You're not throwing the Spencer Howards out there anymore on a day-to-day basis. You really shouldn't be checking in against below-average teams as a home dog anymore, which it felt like the Phillies were live to do, as you would mention, once every other series. So I thought yesterday was a win for the Phillies. Again, is Syndergaard, you know, Thor, right? The guy that, you know, was felt so dominant for the New York Mets? No, but he's been solid this year. And I think that's a huge upgrade for this Phillies team, ultimately. Another upgrade that came in was Whit Merrifield making his way up north. The story, though, here is obviously his vaccination status. The Royals, a couple of weeks back, make the trip to Toronto, basically send out a minor league team because the Royals care about nothing, so none of their team was vaccinated. Benintendi made his way to the Bronx. The expectation is he will be vaccinated. I don't know if he already is or he will be if he needs to be, but he might be able to get around it. There's no getting around it for Whit Merrifield. Like, he's either Kyrie Irving or he is going to be vaccinated. A really interesting situation here, Donnie.
And let's get to the crux of the argument here, because Merrifield being picked up by Toronto is a great move. This is a guy that's a hit machine in an already powerful lineup. You made your team better. But I always like to get back to the vax point. Like, what's the tipping point here? I'm going to play in Kansas City. Nobody cares about Kansas City. We're never going to the playoffs. Who cares? I'm not getting vaccinated. He said, I'm not putting that in my body, right? Forget about even the political terms. Let's just play the way this plays out. Hey, by the way, do you want to go to Toronto? All right, I'll get the vax then. What? That's all it took for you to get the vaccination was being shipped off to Toronto. So it's already a questionable move there, but it looks like he is going to get the vaccination, because why would the Toronto Blue Jays say, hey, you know what? We're going to make a playoff run here. It's nice to have you on the road. And even when you get to the playoffs, you can't play home games in Toronto. Matter of fact, I don't even know if they can come into the country. So does Whit like stay in Detroit, I guess, or does he stay in Buffalo when Toronto plays home games and watches the games on TV and then picks up a flight in the States and flies to, let's just say, Tampa Bay? It didn't make much sense. From a baseball move, it's a great move for Toronto. But for Whit Merrifield to be like, you know, I'm not getting the vax. Hey, do you want to go to Toronto? All right, I'll get the vax. It's just an odd timing and odd thinking on his part.
There, to be fair, the Blue Jays' next home game is actually going to be on August 12th. So he has some runway here. If he wants to take it. The other thing, though, with Whit, and we know it obviously is very positive when you can be put in a much better lineup, but he has been nowhere near the guy that we had come accustomed to. A 240 batting average for, as you label, a hit machine, that is anything but checking in with a batting average that's outside of the top 100 in baseball. And unlike a Juan Soto, he doesn't have some sneaky high on-base percentage. No. Like, the OPS is outside of the top 140 in baseball. Now, again, better lineup. We'll see. Merrifield, though, to me, is at the moment more of a story through the vaccination status than, oh my goodness, let's go grab Blue Jay futures. Whit Merrifield just showed up to town. And now, a part of the, you know, exit strategies, the people leaving, I might be equally as fascinated in the people that are staying. What happened in Chicago? I mean, you've got Ian Happ and Wilson Contreras hugging in the dugout, getting a standing ovation from the crowd, saying their goodbyes. How are these guys still Chicago Cubs? Like, I have no idea how Contreras and Happ are meant to show up to the ballpark and play baseball for the Chicago Cubs for the remainder of this season. While they were emotional and were likely to miss one another and all that comes with playing at Wrigley Field, winning baseball was on the horizon for these two guys. Not anymore, as somehow the Cubs decided we would actually rather lose these guys for nothing than make a deal here at the deadline. There were callers, there were suitors, but none that were willing to meet what was clearly an outrageous asking price from the Chicago Cubs.
A few years ago, the Chicago Cubs were the talk of baseball, breaking the long curse, winning a World Series, a great young core of players, and they were an abject disaster in 2022. So who do you point that to? The players? No. You point it to ownership here, because the one thing that's interesting, this didn't come up, Kevin, as a trade deadline. Oh, my goodness, they're actually thinking about trading Wilson Contreras. Every article written, Kevin, since April the 1st to start Major League Baseball season had Wilson Contreras as the top player to be moved at the deadline. The Cubs knew this. If they wanted a true rebuild, this was the guy that they were going to use as the centerpiece to get that done. There were multiple suitors for Wilson Contreras that we heard all along willing to give up good prospects. And what happens when the ownership group goes, you know what? We're going to overplay our hand. We're going to get back the biggest, you know, surge of prospects you could ever ask for. And coming right down to the deadline, we'll hold that trump card and say to ourselves, you know what? Somebody's going to come calling and give us exactly what we want. And nobody called. So now you sit there in last place with a player that you're now saying, like, you know what? Reason why we didn't trade him here, we're talking extension. So if you're Wilson Contreras' agent, you actually think he's signing an extension on the Chicago Cubs in August when he knows he waits 3 months? He's one of the most sought-after free agents on the market where 15 teams can bid on his services, not one like the Chicago Cubs. What a horrible move. And I know if he gets signed away, you'll get one of those, you know, compensatory draft picks. You could have unloaded with 3 to 4 very good prospects and already been underway on your process. But now you're going to say, I'll take one draft pick for Wilson Contreras at this point. And that was the whole game plan. That is a ridiculous game plan. And they are the big losers. Either, Kevin, you're all in on a rebuild or all out. I don't know what the Cubs are doing.
Yeah, it was really, really surprising because they had big teams interested, the Astros and the Mets most notably. And I said, I was like, man, like, you know, it's not great for Houston, right? You would have rather come away with Contreras than Vasquez. It just seems like that Contreras price was out of range. Speaking of Vasquez, do you think he's looking around a little confused right now? They didn't sell in Boston. They just traded Vasquez, essentially. Like, J.D. Martinez is still there. They brought in Eric Hosmer. They brought in Tommy Pham. Like, was Vasquez like a sneaky locker room problem? I'm kidding. There's no reports about that. But, like, what are we?
Yeah.
What happened? The Red Sox also keep beating the Astros, too, Donnie, now, since the deadline's like, what's going on? Boston's piping hot. What is the deal here?
Yeah, it's like you found the mole. Like, the reason why the Red Sox stunk this year is because Christian Vasquez, and only Christian Vasquez. So once you remove the cancer out of the organization, you start to improve and beat teams like the Astros. Now, we know that's not the way it actually went down, but it is funny where this team was on the, like, hey, should we move some of these guys? And also, they even take on Eric Hosmer, which they basically got for free from the San Diego Padres. So you can say maybe that they were buyers at the deadline because they didn't sell at this point, and maybe there's a run in the Red Sox. How about if the Red Sox make a run into the playoffs? Yeah. And look back, man, ooh, Vasquez was that guy. Thank God we got him out of the locker room. You see how well we're playing at this point now? Now, that's probably not going to be the case, but it's interesting. Like, for the Cubs and the Red Sox, they actually didn't know what they were doing at the deadline, apparently.
They were like, they were listening. Like, they treated Contreras and J.D. Martinez like Shohei Ohtani, except they don't control any of the guys. It just... it didn't make a lot of sense. By the way, because there's so much we have to get to today, but if you were to talk winners and losers of the deadline, one team that I think you have to bring up is the St. Louis Cardinals. And they're, to me, they come off as a loser because we don't have to talk about the Cardinals today. He brought in Jordan Montgomery, all right? Okay, right? I mean, there are people in the Bronx who feel like the Yankees won that deal. St. Louis spent a lot of time, understandably so, loading up in that Soto conversation, Donnie, and it just didn't materialize.
Yeah, it certainly didn't. And maybe it's one of those where you said to yourself, addition by subtraction, because the Brewers didn't improve themselves and took a downgrade, where maybe they thought that, hey, we'll stay pat and we'll just be a better baseball team. We'll see if it plays out that way for the Cardinals.
Yeah, certainly a lot for us to keep our eye on. We make the move, a lot of NFL headlines for us to get to here on a Wednesday morning.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We make the transition to the NFL, where there's a lot of interesting stories for us to hit on. You know, today is a Wednesday. It feels like a wide receiver Wednesday to me, and there's a lot of headlines around the wide receiver position. We'll continue our head-to-head series at the wide receiver position in hour number two as well. It begins, though, with an injury update. And that's Tim Patrick, Broncos wide receiver, with a torn ACL, and that obviously is impactful for a number of reasons. Is this is a, you know, Denver team with big-time aspirations, and you're not looking to lose pieces early on. It serves primarily, before we get to any odds and numbers, Donnie, to me, my first takeaway was it serves as a reminder, considering how early we are into August, that this is going to happen at least one more, if not a couple of more times, before we kick off this season.
Yeah, and it's a shame. And the adage for me, Kevin, is you can't just turn the injuries off like you can in Madden, where you say to yourself, all right, we lost our wide receiver. Now let's go ahead, maybe add another wide receiver. Maybe Odell Beckham Jr. Mm-hmm. comes into the hunt here, but and then we'll be okay for the rest of the season. This team has been a team, Kevin, that's been plagued by injuries at the wide receiver position, where you're saying to yourself, we have young wideouts, Kevin. This isn't like a Julio Jones or a guy aging, but like, you know what? He just can't. DeSean Jackson, right? Hey, we got him for 3 or 4 games, then we'll miss him for 3 or 4 games because of a hamstring injury. This is a shame because this was the strength of this football team, was Russell Wilson passing to these young, talented wide receivers, and you already lost one. They signed him to a nice extension because he's a big part of their future, and now already losing him for the season, certainly devastating for the Broncos, no doubt about it.
The one thing for the Broncos is this is a wide receiver group that they have a lot of trust in. Obviously, they have a lot of trust in Russell Wilson, but you know, for a lot of people, Russ is not going to some big-time downgrade from his Metcalf-Lockett 1-2 punch. There's a lot of folks very excited with the Cortland Sutton-Jerry Jeudy 1-2 punch. KJ Hamler will add in where he can. And I think if you look right now at the season-long numbers, it's some interesting stuff to look at here. When you think about who is going to be the number one wide receiver for this team, right now Jerry Jeudy has a season-long over-under of 950.5 receiving yards. Cortland Sutton, 925.5 receiving yards. So you see that early edge being given to Jerry Jeudy. You look through last year's statistics, and it was Sutton who was the team's leading wide receiver by about 300 yards compared to Jerry Jeudy, but a 7 games played gap. I think there's a couple of ways you could approach this. Tell me, Donnie, you see Jeudy and Sutton here, both under 1,000. What catches your eye?
To be honest with you, like, both of them are going to get a bump here because Patrick's gone. Patrick would add up a lot of those catches and yards, so now you're looking at two clear number one and number two wide receivers. Could they both get 1,000 yards? I think they can, but at the same time, I'm more up on Cortland Sutton at this point here because if we take a look at that 2020 season, which is basically a wipeout because of injury. He's now over a year away, and last year, you know, serviceable, Kevin. What you wanted to see out of your wide receiver? 17 weeks that he did play, you end up with 776 yards. And also, let's remember the quarterbacks that he was actually playing with, not that good. You get an instant upgrade by an all-pro performer, Russell Wilson coming to town. I like the size on him, 6'4", can go in the red zone and make those jump ball catches. So from a standpoint for myself, if I'm going head-to-head, it's no slouch here, no knock on Jerry Jeudy. I just think Cortland Sutton's in command, where I think he has the better chance of getting the 1,000-yard season than Jerry Jeudy.
I am more captivated by Jeudy. That might be the high-profile nature of where he was selected coming out of Alabama and everything that can come with that as he enters his third season in the NFL. But here is the thing to me when you look at these two numbers here. Again, Jeudy, 950.5 for a receiving over-under and Sutton at 925.5. Donnie, can I get you to agree that you grab both of these guys over, you have a legitimate chance at bringing them both home, and next to zero chance to lose both of these numbers? Over the last two seasons, both Metcalf and Lockett have cleared 950 receiving yards. Metcalf's rookie season landed at 900. Lockett was in the 1,000 marker, but again, that was a 16-game season. If I get 17 games, and I know that was a stretch, I think both of these guys, with Russell Wilson as their quarterback, shrinking wide receiver room is the story here, can hit the 1,000 marker. But really, and I look, you lose out on a little bit of minimal juice here. Is there any world that you would go 0-2 taking Sutton and Judy?
No, I don't think so, because even let's look past the injury to Courtland Sutton, you know, the year previous. He had 72 receptions on 125 targets, 1,100 yards receiving, and that was in 16 games. So I think you're right on this, because you're also taking a look at a division, Kevin. This isn't one where you say, hey, rock 'em, sock 'em, robots, 7-6 on Sunday afternoon. Look at the quarterbacks and the offensive talent that you have in that division. Do we think that we're going to get Russell Wilson playing, you know, keep away and, ooh, let's slow the clock down? You need to score in this division if you want to win football games. And I think you're right, because, again, we can't count on injuries happening. If both of these guys are healthy for the season, there's no reason to believe that with Patrick out that both of these guys can at least keep you in the ballpark, right? Because when you want to bet, it's not as if, oh, I'm going to hit it easily. What do you want, Kevin? I need 150 yards over the final 2 weeks to get 1,000 yards. You'll take that every single time. I think it's a good look here. Both of these guys should be hitting that 1,000-yard mark, or at least that over numbers that we're taking a look at with 950 and 925 respectively.
We talked about Russell Wilson on Monday. You know, the over-under for him is over 4,000 yards passing. I think it's understandable if half of that were to be applied to his top two wide receivers here in Sutton and Judy. To keep it with the wide receivers, Deontay Johnson was the talk of the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday. We've heard the Steelers say that they really want to keep Deontay Johnson around. But we're also hearing that the sides are pretty far apart as it pertains to that contract extension. Deontay Johnson fits into a category very similar to me to DK Metcalf. Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, they get paid on principle. Debo Samuel, a quite similar situation. Metcalf, now he earned every bit of that contract, but if you're Metcalf, you're not going out there and then letting them base your salary on your season with Geno Smith and Drew Lock. I know we've laughed and joked about what Big Ben or what he did or didn't have in the tank, obviously, down the back stretch. But I am not going to be paid based on Mitchell Trubisky. Maybe not even a rookie quarterback in Kenny Pickett. 1,100 receiving yards last year for Deontay Johnson. It is more than understandable to me that he is trying to get his money right now.
And he probably should be. But you know what's interesting when I saw this in the notes coming up here? You take a look at Deontay Johnson, and he's a very good young wideout. He's eligible for an extension. Anybody typically that's young and a good wideout and eligible for extension has broken the bank. But for some reason, Kevin, I don't know if it's me, but I don't want to say I downgrade Deontay Johnson because he's a good wide receiver. But I just don't know if he's in the tier of the guys that actually made those moves and got those deals. Now, you could say to yourself, you know, Christian Kirk going over from the Cardinals to the Jacksonville Jaguars, there's your book right there. You don't need to see anymore. I get it. And also take a look at Deontay Johnson's career. 680 yards as a rookie, 923 as a sophomore, third year in the league, 1161. But you're right. And seeing some of the cliff notes coming out of camp for the Pittsburgh Steelers, where Mitchell Trubisky is practicing with the twos and looking terrible while he's with the twos, which leads you to say, all right, the other option is a rookie quarterback here. If you're Deontay Johnson and your agent, you are screaming right now because, contrary to popular belief, yes, we're going to look at Deontay Johnson as a good wide receiver. If he hits the open free agent market in a couple years, he's going to get paid. But you start to get nervous going, boy, oh boy, if we're going to turn into a running football team in the cold Northeast here, and I have Mitchell Trubisky and a rookie, a quarterback, don't get mad at me when I have 51 catches for 620 yards and 3 touchdowns. It wasn't my fault. I need to get paid now before that might happen.
Season-long number on Deontay Johnson is 950 and a half. Deontay last year, 1,100 yards. Man, that's a talented wide receiver. 1,000-yard season should be no problem. I learned this lesson last year the hard way with Allen Robinson. See, DRS, look, he took his lumps, and we each had our losses, but almost all of his were injury-related, right? like Antonio Gibson, I felt like they needed like 50 yards, but he only played like 12 games, right? Something like Allen Robinson could have played 20 games last year and been nowhere near his season-long number because everything going on in Chicago was a nightmare. Yeah, Robinson played 12 games. He had 410 yards. I mean, he wasn't even in the conversation for that season-long number. If you bet an under on Deontay Johnson, you have the opportunity for a holdout, a bad year, a bad offense, or potential injury. I can only look under on that 950.5. Let me get to another situation here, and it involves actually running backs this time, and it involves the Los Angeles Rams. This is coach speak at the highest level, but boy, does it make for a fascinating decision if you now start to look at some season-long projections. Sean McVay was talking about his running backs, Darrell Henderson and Cam Akers, and he gave the dreaded, I think we've got two starting running backs line. Now, fantasy players know how much of a headache that can be. Cam Akers is really a way more sought-after player than Darrell Henderson. But when we start to line up season-long projections, if they really have two starting running backs, it would have to be under City. We do not have Darrell Henderson numbers, but we do have them for Cam Akers. 849.5 yards, a yes-no on 850 rushing yards. 7.5 rushing touchdowns for Cam Akers. But Donnie, I don't know what to do if they have two starting running backs.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the life of the NFL now. But when you do have a guy as explosive as Cam Akers, and let's take a look at 2020 season for him, where he came on late in that season and also was a marvel in the playoffs, going, man, you found your back of the future, only to have your entire season wiped out basically by injury. Comes back for the stretch run of the playoffs, which is amazing stuff. So you figure now he's healthy coming in. And I know coaches speak, right? We have two running backs. Do you really have that? I mean, you have two capable guys, but if you say to yourself, all right, Sean, when this game is really going to get in the tough moments here in the second half, who are you handing the football? It's going to be Cam Akers at this point here, and I'm going to take him now. That is an interesting number, 850, because do you slow play Cam Akers this season, ramp him up here for the playoffs, and that's where you really need him. But I do think the 7.5 rushing touchdowns is legitimate here. Cam Akers is going to be your guy. There's no reason to believe, Kevin, he can't approach 10 rushing touchdowns if he's healthy this season. That's the way I would look. I don't want any running back by committee stuff. Give me the ball in the goal line. I'll deal with that.
I can't get there on the touchdowns because that to me is the area where things can be the cloudiest, right? All right, we rely on Cam, 20-20. Couple of fumble issues, that's not your spot. And here's the other thing. Now that Jared Goff's not in town, Donnie, you know this. They got on the 5-yard line. What's play one? Now he's not there, but it's a fade. It was a fade route to Odell Beckham Jr. And then play two was an out route to Cooper Kupp, and play number three was an in route to Cooper Kupp. Last year, Donnie, 41 passing touchdowns for Matthew Stafford. This is one of the best offenses in football. They had, as a team, 10 rushing touchdowns. As a team, that is a pretty low number there, to be honest with you, again, for as high-powered of an offense as the one that we are dealing with here. From a rushing perspective, look, Sonny Michel last year, on just 200 carries, got you 845. Like, I think Akers, especially if he is commanding the load, absolutely can get you across the finish line on 850 rushing yards. But I cannot touch these touchdowns because that is one of those bets, Donnie, where you turn on, you've got your red zone on. Ooh, perfect. Rams are at the 3. Run it. No! Run it. Stop! And then all of a sudden, again, it's another touchdown to Cooper Kupp, and he's cashing people's minus 140 anytime touchdown tickets. We'll close out hour number one after this quick break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Sometimes here on the early line, you want to extend the hand, you want to be a friend, you want to help your guy out, you want to throw him a bone, because I pieced this whole thing together. I realized I left something out, and that was the opportunity to ask Donnie a largely rhetorical question around Deshaun Watson, and that's what we have exactly enough time to do here. So Don, even though usually you're the one who likes to ask the question, I'll play that role today. When do we hear from the NFL, Donnie? Is it today? Is it within the next couple of hours? Is it tomorrow? Do we not hear from the NFL? When do we get the answer on their appeal to Deshaun Watson's six-game suspension?
You would say it has to be today, right? Because the deadline actually, Kevin, is listed at 9 a.m. Eastern Thursday morning. So anytime between now and then, we're going to have to hear. And I doubt there'll be a press conference here as we wind down the early line tomorrow where Roger Goodell takes the mic at 8:58 to say that they are opting in or out of an extra investigation into Deshaun Watson. It has to be today. 3 o'clock press conference Eastern. That's what I'm calling it right now. The NFL will decide what they're going to do.
How about that right on the nose? I know there are some people out there who strongly believe that they are not going to appeal because it would make a mockery of this entire process, that letting Robinson go through this whole thing and the CBA. If you think they care about the PR hit on that process more than their own league and standing within the perception of everybody, Donnie, how quickly will they tear up that CBA? I mean, come on now. No one is worried about Robinson's feelings being hurt here and the six-game suspension that was levied.
Yeah, there are a couple organizations ready to pounce once Roger Goodell takes the microphone and says, we'll live with the judge's decision here. It's going to get ugly for the NFL, and they know it. Let's see what they have to say today, or hopefully by the end of today.
Speaking of ugly for the NFL, the Dolphins. Hour number two is next.
What do one of the world's top food cities, a nationally celebrated zoo and science museum, and a Condé Nast Traveler Top 10 Best Big City in the Country have in common? Yes, it's Columbus. This isn't just a stop on the map. It's where award-winning flavors, unforgettable family moments, and big city buzz come together. Let's be honest. Columbus is turning heads. For top-of-the-line discoveries in your own backyard, visit experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.